Like nearly one in five people, Matt Haig suffers from depression. His book, Reasons to Stay Alive, is his account of how minute by minute and day by day he overcame the disease with the help of reading, writing, and the love of his parents and his girlfriend, now wife. And eventually he learned to appreciate life all the more for it. Speaking as his present self to his former self in the depths of depression, Matt is adamant that the oldest cliche is the truest. There is light at the end of the tunnel. The book looks to teach us to celebrate the small joys and moments of peace that life brings, and reminds us that there are always reasons to stay alive. The new book is Reasons to Stay Alive, and we welcome Matt Haig to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's very nice to have you. What is it like for a novelist to write a memoir?
Well, quite difficult, I suppose. If this was a book I was scared of writing. I'd written 10 books before it as a way of putting it off, I suppose, and it's easier to hide behind fiction. Fiction is a nice shield, so you can explore things without it actually being about you, whereas this book is me, and it's the most sort of painful experience I've been through. And, I mean, it's not just about me, it's about depression generally. But, yeah, it was hard getting to that place. But weirdly, when I started writing it, it turned into the fastest book I've written, and it was actually surprisingly therapeutic and surprisingly easy to actually write about it. I think because it had been building up inside me for a long time, and so I was ready to write it when it came to that point.
I said in the introduction that you overcame the disease. Do you believe that you ever overcome it, or do you just learn how to control it?
To a degree, I believe that you recover. I think it's not always necessarily helpful to think in terms of restoring to 100% full health, because I don't necessarily believe in 100% full health. I think we're always all on a scale, even people who aren't ill are all on a scale somewhere, and we would never think for a minute that we're all sort of physical superheroes who are 100% physically healthy. And I think the same for mental health. I think we're all always on a scale, and even in the course of a day we have different sort of mental states. In terms of illness, I feel a lot sort of stronger and better than I used to, but I'm still susceptible. I will still occasionally have depression. The one key thing that has changed is that I accept it now, I understand it now, and I understand the things that help to make me feel a bit better. And I'm also strangely thankful for it. I'm thankful for being someone who's known depression, because I've weirdly known more happiness this side of being ill than I ever did beforehand. So it's actually taught me a lot about life and about myself.
Do you still take medication?
No, I don't take medication. I took medication for a relatively short amount of time, actually, because I was prescribed the wrong medication for me. I was prescribed Valium and anti-anxiety medication, whereas I probably needed antidepressants. But what that experience did was it kind of made me phobic, irrationally, quite scared of taking medication or getting that kind of help. So I had to go the long, hard way back to health. The only good thing there is that I had to learn myself what made me feel better, what made me feel worse. But, yeah, I was very ill and probably needed to be on medication longer. It's just that I hadn't found the right things for me.
There's so many things in this book that I have suffered through panic, anxiety, and depression as well. So a lot of this really hit home to me, and I just wonder if you, in reading it, that because you say so many things that I don't know that if anyone who has not felt this way would quite understand. And one of those things, not to say that you wouldn't enjoy or understand the book, you certainly would, but one of the things you're talking about in a panic, when you talk about panic attacks, is you say that if you have a reason for a panic attack, then you don't know what a panic attack is. Because
yeah.
It's just completely irrational.
It's strange, because I was on a plane last night coming into New York, and we were going through turbulence, and there was an electric storm, and they had to circle the runway for about an hour in the air. Everyone was panicking. But that was natural panic. That was a collective panic attack, which had an understandable reason, and which ends the moment the plane lands and you kiss the ground and you're thankful. But no, this kind of panic, the sort of capital A anxiety, that is panic for no reason. And depression is the same. It's depression for no reason. We all have reasons to feel sad at various points in our life. But when you have no apparent reason to feel sad, and you're in this state of depression, which is more intense than any sadness that I had ever known, and you can't get out of it, but you don't understand what caused it. And that's so frustrating and so scary initially when you first have it, because if you know a reason, if you have a reason, then you can deal with that reason and address it. But when you don't know what's causing it, then you start to worry.
Were you able to work in the depths of your depression?
No. I mean, we weren't in a great situation in terms of money. Me and my partner, my girlfriend, who's now my wife, we were struggling in that sense, but I physically couldn't go out to work. I could not. I mean, even to give it perspective, even to go and get some milk from the corner store around from where my parents lived, because I was back living with my parents due to necessity, I couldn't go to that store on my own. When I did finally get the courage to literally walk 300 yards to the store, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. It was like trekking across the Himalayas. I know how ridiculous that sounds, but that was the place I was in. So things like that were very difficult. Even things like reading a book was difficult at that time. Eventually, reading and writing were one of the things that helped me.
Right.
But it took a long time to get there.
And it's because the focus is almost impossible.
Yeah.
It
was impossible to focus. I had so much going on in my head. It felt like a sort of, my mind was in a permanent state of sort of fire. And I just, I found it incredibly, incredibly hard to focus. And also, it was exhausting. The depression can be quite exhausting. It's very intense. You're living with this intensity all the time. So while it might outwardly look like you're just a healthy, normal 24-year-old man, you can be sort of dying inside and having this incredible, exhausting battle going on that no one's seen.
Because it is as if every muscle is clenched. And
every muscle is clenched. It's psychologically draining. It's very physical, too. A lot of the symptoms are below the neck. This is the thing people don't realize. The divide between physical and health and mental health is a very, very blurred one. You know, the mind and the body are very much interrelated. And, you know, one of my ways back to relative mental health was through physical health, because I hadn't been that healthy before, because I've been denying a lot of sort of burgeoning problems. I was drinking too much, I was smoking, I wasn't looking after myself, I wasn't sleeping well. And so correcting a lot of those stuff helped sort of lay the foundations for getting myself in order again, but it was a long process.
Do you still drink?
Sorry?
Do you still drink?
I do occasionally drink. I never ever drink at home. I never drink on consecutive days. I set myself rules. I have to live by strict rules now. I went over a decade without drinking at all. I only started drinking again 2 years after becoming a parent. That's no comment on having children, by the way. That is simply because I knew that hangovers were totally off the table then. I could not be woken up at 5 in the morning and be hungover. So I felt I could occasionally drink. I rarely, rarely do. I go for months without drinking. I absolutely am convinced that alcohol is a major, for me, a major depressant. Over the years, where there have been little periods where I take my eye off the ball and I drink sort of on consecutive days. I'm not talking about all day drinking. I'm just talking about having two or three drinks on an evening. If I do that for 2 or 3 days in a row, I will start to feel ill. It's not the only thing that triggers me, but alcohol is definitely one of those things I have to be careful of.
I'm sorry, what was the other one?
Sleep, if I'm not sleeping well,
yeah.
Due to work or being too late on the computer or smartphone, all of those things I think play a part.
You write in the book that you can pinpoint the time of the day that the old you died. And so what do you believe brought that out? I mean, is that a point of no return where you say, okay, this is as low as I can go and I'm ready to come out of that?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that. When you're going through it, even though it is the worst thing you've ever felt, because depression only gives you a very, very negative state of mind, you actually think things are just going to keep on getting worse and worse and worse. And this isn't true, obviously, because you're already at the bottom of a valley, and the bottom of the valley never gives you the clearest view. And so you're there, you're stuck there, and you can't see a way out. What slowly happens, and it is slowly, even if it's not physically slowly, even if it's only a matter of days, these days feel like a very long time when you're very ill. What starts to happen is that time proves depression wrong. Time says, well, these things you thought were going to happen or thought were going to get worse, they're not actually happening. So, for instance, I was convinced I wouldn't still be here at the age of 25. Then you reach the age of 25, and now I'm the age of 40, and the depression, the things it tells you, starts to look a bit ridiculous. So time is the one thing I think that is bigger than depression, and that's bigger than ourselves even, and time is a very good and useful weapon against depression. And I used to build time up the way other people sort of build money up in their bank account. I'd say, okay, it's been 22 days, it's been 23 days. These used to be real achievements, just making it through days.
Right. It is, and I think anyone who's gone through this knows that the common reaction from the outside world is everything's going to be okay and you'll snap out of it. And it's so much more difficult than that. But ultimately, you were able to, quote unquote, with a lot of work, snap out of it. Is for you, that road took how long before you said to yourself, okay, this is a new me?
Yeah, it happened incrementally. It did not happen all at once. I became ill quite suddenly, but the recovery was in stages. It was a learning curve. It was an education. I was slowly learning what made me feel better and what made me feel worse. The one useful thing about depression is a way of seeing it is as an intensifying of life. It may be a total negative intensifying, but it actually exaggerates everything. So even choosing what pair of socks to wear becomes this sort of big existential crisis. So everything is intensified. So within that, you actually learn little things that make you feel better, little things that make you feel worse, whether it's food or drink or alcohol or whatever, or whether it's talking to people or things that you're thinking about, work things. What happens, though, is when you start to have those moments of neutrality, not necessarily moments of happiness, but just moments of not thinking about depression, then you suddenly realize that's possible. You don't have to live like this forever. You may be stuck in this place for a certain amount of time, but there is a possibility of feeling better, of getting over it. And so once that starts to happen, it gets a bit of momentum and you get your sort of energy back and you start to believe. So even when you fall back again, you know there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know I won't always be feeling like that. And that feeling grows and grows and grows. And there are setbacks along the way, but eventually you get there. And you learn things that help you. You learn people. You find people that you can talk to about it and people that you can't, but that you have people that you can talk to about it. You can write about it, in my case. You can get it out of you in some different ways.
The new book is Reasons to Stay Alive. Matt Haig, thanks so much for being with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That was great.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.